On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. Everybody, I'm here with Henry Alec of the Los Angeles Angels organization. Henry, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Yeah, so as you said, I'm Henry Alec. I'm with the Los Angeles Angels. This past season, I was at the AA affiliate, the Rocket City Trash Pandas. This is my third year with the Angels. I started in 2020, so technically second full year with the Angels. Third year in baseball. Started in 2018 with the Phillies. I was in low A Lakewood up in New Jersey. I graduated TCU in Fort Worth. Obviously, big shout out to them right now, top 10. After graduation, I started actually an internship with UCLA. Started my graduate program and worked at UCLA with some Olympic sports. I was with baseball, softball, water polo, kind of a handful of teams. And you know, that was my really kind of my first introduction to strength conditioning. And you know, after that, it was, you kind of fell in love and got addicted to it. So I finished up my graduate work. I got a graduate coach spot at UT in Austin with Longhorns baseball and like assisted with some other sports. Probably the coolest part about obviously with baseball, but I was also the head strength coach with the cheer and palm team. So like the dance team there, which was by far the hardest thing I think I've done in strength conditioning with, you know, 80 girls and 10 male cheerleaders. It's trying to run a room of that is unreal. So that was kind of a fun experience there. But then after UT, jumped in with the Phillies. So I've been in baseball since 2018. So.
When you were at TCU, did you get any, you didn't get any chance to work in the weight room there or anything?
Not with them, no. And so that was something that, you know, and I've had a relationship with Zach a little bit through text and email, and that was about it. So that's something that, you know, I got the opportunity down there, and should have jumped on it down there if I could have. But, you know, I think where I've been, UCLA and Texas, it's just being immersed in different D1 cultures was eye-opening for sure. And, you know, I have beyond a lot of respect for TCU sports. So, and what Zach does there for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. He's the best.
Yeah, I got some of his players too. So that's made it even better. You know, I got TCU Horned Frogs with me on my team and, you know, getting to talk shop with them about Zach and his program. So that's been pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do you think the cheer experience helped you in baseball? Like, I know they're not like necessarily connected, but you think it helped?
Dude, I think just in strength conditioning, that was, I mean, I had to pretty much learn to run a program of 80 athletes. And I say athletes because they were, I mean, some of those cheerleaders, I mean, it's the most unbelievable. I mean, they can do pull-ups for days. I mean, climb a rope. I mean, it was pretty unbelievable the athleticism they had, and you know, running a room of 80 athletes with that was eye-opening too, but learned a lot from it. And you know, I had a it was 2-3 times a week, so it was constant. I mean, having to stay on top of everything, be organized for 80 athletes. So it was fun. I learned a lot from that, honestly. It was almost a break to go to baseball. It was like, okay, I can go to baseball now. Stop thinking as much.
I feel like that's the best experience, right? Like when I was a GA, I had baseball, softball, women's soccer were my teams. And then all the other GAs I was close with. So we all just kind of helped each other's teams out. And felt the same way. Like there were some teams where I was like mentally exhausted. And then I went to baseball and I have a very clear view of what I want you guys to do. And I need you to do this, just do it. And then some of the other teams, like one of my buddies was the women's volleyball team. And it was like, interesting to see, like they were all very tall, very like springy, and then like getting in the squat, they were a little uncoordinated. Like it was just interesting. But I think those experiences are really valuable for when you come to professional baseball, because we get a lot of players of different shapes and sizes, and
definitely
different training ages and different cultures and things like that. Yeah. So I could see
definitely was a big part of it. I mean, just that they have positions too, you know, there's a base, there's flyers. And so just having to train kind of differently with them. And honestly, just like baseball, it's a long season. So it's getting them to be focused and change it up and kind of compete with it a little bit. You know, that was kind of the fun part of it, is getting them engaged every week, you know, 'cause they still have cheer practice to do. And talk about brutal. That was watching those practices. I mean, it was hours and hours of practice that they'd be there. And, you know, so it was kind of the weight room where you tried to make it for them a little bit of a kind of a headspace to kind of clear their head and just, hey, 45 minutes with me, we'll roll this, have fun and get out, you know, and get to class.
Yeah. It was
a good experience.
It's definitely like you watch them during games and things like that, and it's just so choreographed and so like perfectly aligned, and they're all so strong and springy, and like,
oh, it's crazy.
These are like closet, like really freaky athletes.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And I, you know, I've worked with some gymnasts too. I was at a facility working with gymnasts, and that too, I mean, it was like, I had a 13-year-old girl that you're trying to teach them some movements, and once they get it, they pick it up. Like teaching an RDL, a hinge pattern, like that can be brutal, right? Sometimes, but you know, they teach it, they feel it one time and they got it. And it's just like their sport. I mean, in gymnastics and cheerleading, they have to, you know, feel those movements to get them. They do it over and over again. But I mean, it was remarkable working with some of these athletes. It's crazy.
Yeah, I've always said if we end up having kids, I want them to either do karate or gymnastics.
Absolutely. Dude, I said the exact same thing to my wife with our son now. I was like, dude, he's going to do karate or gymnastics. Absolutely. I was like, get him going.
Yeah, just the body awareness and the relative strength and all of that. Just, I think it goes a long way. And I've even seen some guys that had done it as kids, and they're like, hey, look at this thing I can do. And I'm like, how can you do that? I'm like, oh, I learned it in gymnastics when I was 8. And then I'm like,
oh yeah.
And it stuck with you. And they're like, I just know how to do it. So.
Unreal, man. We had a pitcher this year who did gymnastics growing up, and he could do a backflip. You know, we'd run sprints, he'd come back, hit a backflip. Mm-hmm. Jesus, dude. I'm like, I can't teach you that one. Sorry.
No. Yeah, exactly. So getting into your professional baseball life, like, what is your best professional baseball story that you have so far?
Yeah, I kind of thought of two funny-ish ones here. My first year, I celebrated a walk-off kind of in a not so coach-like fashion. First year with the Phillies in Lakewood, again, new to pro baseball. I was first time in an affiliate. I was the youngest on the staff, and we had a walk-off win, and my ass just leaps over the railing, starts sprinting full speed to celebrate with the guys. And I look back at the dugout, and you know, my entire staff is shaking hands, smiling. And it was a little eye-opening, like, oh shit, I'm not a player anymore. Gotta suit it up a little bit. And then this past season, kind of one that stuck with me and just being in minor league baseball, last season I was in high A with Tri-City with the Angels, and we played up in Everett. Our manager gets tossed mid-game. Of course, their clubhouse is in, you know, no man's land, left field. And, you know, the exit for it, of course, is behind the dugout, through the concessions, and then through the concourse. So, of course, manager goes, hey, kind of escort me up there. I'm like, yeah, I gotcha. So we walk out through the concessions into the concourse, and I mean, he's full uniform. I'm trying to escort him through fans. I'm hearing people chirping at us from all angles. I mean, the scene alone was just, it was unforgettable, that moment. Just to me, it was kind of a laughable moment, and just showing you how many hats you have to wear sometimes.
Yeah, there's definitely a lesson in that. And just, you know, we're not just strength and conditioning coaches, right? We're a lot of things, and the baseball staff tends to lean on us for things that definitely don't fall within our job description sometimes. But, and the other lesson is, like, minor league clubhouses are never located in an ideal place.
Yeah, of course. That was great. I mean, I'm smelling pop. People are walking around with hot dogs and popcorn. I'm trying to like get through fans. It was an experience, man.
Yeah. I can only imagine. Yeah. So what do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily anything crazy, you know, but looking at the success, kind of, in my opinion, of a program or of strength conditioning or what we consider a good program, I think it relies solely on the coach that's implementing it, or the coaches that are implementing it. You know, if the preparation sucks for what we're giving, then the product's going to suck, right? So to me, it's establishing that environment, right, that creates consistency in training. It pushes high effort, attention to detail. You know, I think if we as the coaches don't care about what we do, then obviously the athlete's not going to care. You know, it's to me, that's creating that environment more than anything. You know, I think you're buying that or building that buy-in and building that trust, kind of, I'm going to get more out of my athlete with that than I am with a crazy, you know, put together program, detail specific, which is obviously important, but they're not giving it with high effort or paying attention to detail to it, then I think it's, you know, almost worthless in a sense.
Yeah, I would agree. I think just building that quality environment for athletes to train. And again, sometimes, like you said, it's just a headspace to clear your head. Sometimes it's, you know, more like difficult training sessions. Sometimes it's just mobility sessions. Sometimes it's, you know, whatever the case may be, like having that environment set for them, and have it prepared and kind of, hey, this is what we're going through today. Have the music ready or whatever, you know, like gets them in the door. And then the program itself, like getting the results that you're seeking for them, keeps them there, right? Or even like brings other people with them, right? Like if they come and that's, then, go ahead.
Oh no, I was gonna say that's exactly like, to me, it's your prepared form, right? Your organized form, you're a step ahead. And then like you said, it's sometimes creating consistency may be just establishing that, like, hey, here's the standard for our workouts for the week. And then like you were saying though, maybe a mobility day or implementing modified work days for guys that, you know, recovery emphasis days that, hey, we're going to be in the weight room. We may not touch a lot of volume or touch a lot of intensity, but the standard was to come in and get work done this amount of days or have this amount of days done, or this day you know, I'm holding you accountable. You said on, you know, you're done Saturdays mornings. You wanted to make sure you get stuff in. So it's keeping it, to me, it's like building that consistency is just as important with working with the guy, right? Like implementing recovery days, guys appreciate that. Implementing modified work days, guys appreciate that. And that to me, you know, even competitions, like getting guys to just be kind of have some fun in there, in my opinion, that's, I'm building way more success. And I think, like you said there too, it's, you're getting a little more effort. Guys are kind of seeing each other move and the music is blasting. You know, it's just, it's creating that environment that's just going to keep building consistency, I think.
Yeah. And that was what I was going to ask, was just to elaborate on, like, we talk about building like a quality environment. Like, is there anything else you're doing? You talk about like having a plan and having a music and understanding the goal for the day. Like, are there other things you're doing to help build that environment to get guys drawn into you?
Yeah, I think, you know, to me, it's something that our coordinator too now, we've kind of been talking about, and we did in the off season, was a lot of competition work too. And it may be something as simple as, you know, dumbbell holds at the end of a lift. I mean, just getting guys to compete a little bit on a regular basis, I think within the weight room is just as important in season as it is in the off season. So that, like, and again, it was something as simple as that, something as simple as competition games that are, you know, minimal volume, minimal intensity, that guys can compete still in season and still have some fun with the work, right? They're not coming in and looking at their program. Okay. X this off. All right, I'm done. See ya. It's creating kind of this buy-in of let's have some fun in here and get our work done and then get on with the day type of thing. And I think a lot of that was either building competitiveness with the weight room, you know, making sure certain guys lifted together. That was something this season for me that I changed. You know, it was seeing two infielders, that one was more of a veteran, one was kind of a little younger. When they lifted together, it was ideal. And so that, to me, it was trying to push those things, right? Kind of, you don't have a lifting partner, but you have somebody that kind of pushes you in a sense. And that, to me, was big this year. And I've kind of found those groups and tried to get those guys to make sure they were on the same kind of schedule with their programs. Because in my opinion, it you got a lot more out of them from it.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. I mean, the thing is, like, all of these guys are inherently really competitive, right? So, like,
of course, yeah.
And it's not just the big things, right? Of course, it's on the field and, you know, in turn, anything, literally anything. And, like, the big rocks, you know, like gym awares and bar speed or, like, force plates or, like, the big things they're going to compete at. But even the small things, like, if you tell a guy to do a plank and the right guy walks in, he's going to try to outplank him, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
To go off of your example of, like, the right guys lifting with each other. Like last year I had a starter, I showed him some mobility stuff. He really likes it. And one of the other starters walks in like, oh, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, I'm doing mobility. All right, let me see if I can beat you in that. And I'm like, it's just mobility. And then before you know it, like all four starters who are not pitching that day are all doing it together and like talking shit to each other. Yeah, and like, come on, dude, you can get deeper than that. Like you can hold that higher than that. And I'm like, you guys are unbelievable. Oh, but at the same time, like you said, if it's appropriate and the intensity is appropriate, the volume is appropriate, like you might as well play off of that competition because they're all going to compete. Like,
of course. Yeah. And that's funny you say it's even a mobility day. It's like, similar situations, you've taken a guy through some work, some extra work, and somebody sees it. Not only they interested like, hey, what are you guys doing? But it's how do I get better at this now? And I love that. Yeah. And it's watching those two guys compete with, hell, stretching, like, you know, you don't see that, but it's entertaining. And that's their kind of their mindset.
Yeah, I would agree. So I think to the big point, right, is like just creating that environment comes down to the pre-planning, like you talked about, having your ducks in a row, like understanding the goal for the training sessions, and then just taking advantage of guys' natural competitiveness. How about success? I have you on. I don't know if this one's going to come out before or after the strength coach of the year one, but you were the strength coach of the year in AA. And so first and foremost, congrats to you. And again, there is a group episode. But just what do you believe makes a strength and condition coach successful, maybe at the affiliate and then just more specifically like in general?
Yeah. You know, I think within baseball, especially at the affiliate, the third, again, it's only my, I say it's only my third full season, at an affiliate, but to me, it's this season, especially it's understanding that no matter what, you got to embrace the hecticness of the day, you know, and I know everyone's talked about that. It's being, I heard this was kind of I was an intern at UCLA and the term be comfortable with being uncomfortable. Right. And so it's embracing the chaos of what's happening to the day to day, you know, staying prepared, learning to change on the fly. You know, like we always talk about too, the schedule's in play. We have a plan in place for the day, for the week, for the month, whether it's a program or a pitcher's rotation, but being prepared for when, you know, your players are there to work, being organized, being detailed. And I like the term just embracing it all, like it's just taking it all in every day and knowing that, like, again, you get to have fun today and we want our guys to get our work in, but embracing it all too. You know, I think that's just the affiliate life to me is having to understand how to embrace the chaos. in general, from a strength conditioning standpoint, you know, it's something I've learned over the years for sure is understanding the why to everything we do. You know, I know we've heard that before but I've worked with some combine guys after my first season in baseball, and the educate, you know, we're using force plates and using technology that, again, it's over guys' heads a lot of the time, but educating them enough to understand the application of what we're doing, right? So like why this benefits them, why this benefits the team, why this benefits performance, you know, whether it's introductory middle school kids on how to, you know, weightlift properly, or whether it's pro baseball players, it's getting them to understand there's the reason for why we're doing things. And I'm big on them asking me questions, you know, and I say it in season all the time. I'm like, dude, talk to me. Like if you see something or why we're doing something, like I want to answer those questions. Cause one, it shows you that you can trust me, that I know what I'm talking about in a sense where I have a plan and a reason for it. That I think is important more than anything. You know, there's new technology and new techniques all the time, and understanding the why to why we're doing things is, I think, above all, the most important.
Yeah, when I was at TCU, we had to do a sample program, and that was one of the things that Zach really harped on, was like, have a reason for everything that you write in your program. Like, there's no point that I should point something out and be like, why do you have this? And you don't have a reason. And we did that. We sat down, we went over the program, and he asked one of the most, like, I don't know, I had like a different position for like a anti-rotation hold. And he was like, why are you doing this position instead of that position? And I was like, well, this. And he was like, okay, as long as you have a reason. Like, exactly. I wouldn't do it this way, but I understand because you have a reason. Like, I think that goes a long way. And then the other side of that too is like having the reason why you don't have something in your program, right? Because guys are going to come to you and they're going to say, oh, I saw this, why don't we do this? Yeah. And then you have to have a reason to not have things. So you can't include everything, right?
Like, oh, 100%.
You know what I mean? You have to filter things. And sometimes guys are going to come to you like, I want to do this, why don't we do this? Well, I don't know. Okay, well, I'm going to do it then. You know what I mean? Like, you have to have a reason.
It's always that, or it's fine. You know, there may be questions that I asked in a season that I'm like, dude, I don't have the answer to that, but I will find the answer to that. Yeah. Whether it's contacting the nutritionist or talking to the trainer, it's like, I want to show you guys there's a why to it. There's a reason for it. I'm going to find out the answer, but you know, it's 100% agree. There's a why to why this was done a certain way versus why it wasn't done a different way, you know?
Yeah. And even as far as reaching out to those coaches, right? Like guy shows you, hey, this guy's doing this exercise, why don't we do this? Well, let me get that guy's info. I'll reach out and see how he plans it, he programs it, what his progressions are, and then I'll get back to you, right? And then the key there is following up with the guy, right?
100%.
Like, don't just leave him hanging out there, and then, you know, 2 weeks later, he's like, hey, did you ever figure this out for me or not? Yeah. Like, oh, no,
got no
I didn't.
Answer, yeah.
Okay, man, well, I'm going to do it then since you didn't look for it, you know what I mean? So. How about advice for others in the field? Maybe young coaches just looking to get in, new to pro ball, or just older coaches that have been around a long time that are listening. Just any advice you have.
Yeah. For starters, the getting into it, I think doing an internship is ideal in my opinion. I learned more about kind of my weaknesses as a coach and as a person than anything. You know, it's going through the trenches of it a little bit, and for most of us that have done an internship, I'm sure we've all dealt with the same thing. You're up early setting up, you're out late breaking down. And that to me was eye opening. And it really proved, you know, out of the five of us that may start an internship, you know, it's how many are going to continue on into this field. And it's being battle tested in that sense. So I think that's above all important to put yourself through that before you even dive into this field, because it's, you know, it's grueling. And then just in general, kind of like just staying relevant with topics, I think, you know, that's something that I've tried to do. I've heard that term before. It's adding tools to your toolbox or tool belt and understanding new methods to explore. You know, you may never use any of them, but guarantee a player has heard of them or has done things before, and they're going to ask you questions about it. And like we just talked about, it's knowing the why or having a reason, or, you know, exploring new topics in the field and at least having an understanding of what it might be. You know, I, for example, the athletes this year, you know, they see FRC, right? Everyone's doing certain things with FRC now. So players who come to me with questions about it, it helped me that I've taken the course, that I understand the concepts, and okay, they want to implement certain things. So it's, to me, it's staying relevant on whatever the new topics are or old topics that you need to refresh on. I mean, that to me is important.
Yeah, the FRC, that's a good example. I think a lot of people are using that now. And I saw that as well. And when I was living in Arizona, they had like the course at the Rockies facility, and it was a bunch of teams coming, and I'm friends with the Rockies coordinator. I was like, I need to get into this. And he was like, well, it's kind of teams. And I was like, no, like, I will pay my way. I don't like, because I know it's that important. Like, I know it's that relevant. And so sometimes you have to, you know, go out of your way to figure these things out. And of course it's, you know, it's online. I could have just looked up, but like I got the full course and it was the FRC FRA. So there was a little bit of extra involved in there, but totally agree with you on staying relevant. And then on the other side of that, the first part you're talking about with an internship, one of the things you said that I haven't really thought about is like how many will last after this internship. And I think about like, when I first started school, I was an engineering major, chem engineering, and they told us 2 out of 3 are going to make it. So if you look left and you look right, one of you is not going to make it. And I told the guy on my left and my right, so you guys don't have to worry. I'm going to be the one that doesn't. Like, I don't belong here.
Yeah.
And I transferred everything, whatever. But now, like, thinking about my internship, we had 5 of us. And the one guy I've stayed closest to just got a director job in college. And then
that's awesome.
The other 3 guys, to be honest, like, I'm not really sure. I don't think they're doing strength and conditioning. They may be doing like private setting, but like, it's just thinking about like, you know, that group of 5, like if every time there's a group of 5 to 10 interns, 2, 3, whatever, like not all of them are going to be strength coaches. And sometimes they they lose the interest. Sometimes there's just not enough jobs. Sometimes they go into private setting, they go to PT school, or they decide to be ATs or anything, you know what I mean? But it's just an interesting point that I had never really thought of.
Yeah. And that's, and that to me, you're right. And it's not like, you know, it's not like someone's fizzling out of it. It's just maybe the interest is lost, not knowing, you know, what it entailed, and then kind of seeing it day to day and being like, whoa, this is, you know, I like this side of it better. And, you know, it's, I 100% agree. It's who's left standing in the field you thought you wanted to start in, you know what I mean? And even the path, like I, you know, I kind of knew baseball was my path in a sense, starting at UCLA with baseball. And that was my background, and being at UT with baseball. But even then it was, you know, I had an opportunity to go be a GA at a football program, you know, and I didn't take that, but it was something that like, that was a different path and maybe that wouldn't have worked for me, you know, and whatever it might be. It's even within strength conditioning, what paths are kind of ideal for yourself as a coach.
Yeah. I think that's a key point, right? It's like, some, not all internships are created equally, right? And so you have to do some research instead of just signing on. And I've said this before, but I wanted to get into baseball, and I had an internship that I had accepted, and then TCU called, Zach called and offered me an internship down there. And I was like, if I want to get into baseball, I have to work under this guy and I have to learn from him. So I had to call the other internship, like, hey, I can't commit to it. And, you know, it's a shitty thing, but it worked out well for me. And they found other interns and everything. It's just understanding that the path that you want to take, like you probably need to find the appropriate internships. And, you know, when I was GA in grad school at Salisbury, it's just, you know, Division III school, but we had an internship program and we had a ton of interns, ton of volunteers. And it was like, we have to figure out what you want to do, and we have to try to get you placed where that's going to benefit you the most for your career so that you don't lose interest, so to speak.
Yeah.
So,
and that's, I 100% agree. It's even starting out, it's like guys who are in school, whether they're going the PT route or whether they're going to kind of dive into more different route of kinesiology. But I think it starts there too. It's like, you know, asking that question in class. I remember a teacher asking that question in class was like, how many of you are on the physical therapy route? And a ton of people raise their hand. And how many of you are, you know, strength conditioning, whatever it might be? And it was three of us. It was like, okay, it's interesting. It's, you know, it's finding that path, dude. It's intriguing.
Yeah, 100%. That's how my grad program was. It was basically, you know, applied physiology, and it was just three different paths. And like, there was a couple of us in strength and conditioning, a couple of us in like cardiac and pulmonary, and then like either PT, AT, whatever it was. Yeah. It's like, you know, that was the path we were choosing. And then it's like, all right, from there, what steps do we have to make to make these goals like realistic for us? And even if you take all the right steps, you know, things don't always fall in place. You do need a little bit of luck on your side too, but like,
great.
Putting the odds at least semi in your favor by taking the right steps, I think does go a long way.
Definitely.
So let's go back to the other side of that. You're talking about staying relevant with topics and tools in the toolbox. Where are you going for continuing ed? Like what books you're reading, seminars you're attending, podcasts you're listening to, just where are you going for that?
Yeah. You know, I was thinking books, in terms of like, kind of just leadership books, that's kind of been my thing. And I know a lot of us do read those, and I try and find ones that aren't as I don't know how to explain it the best way, a little more applicable to some of kind of our daily life. It's the Simon Sinek. I don't know if you've heard the Leaders Eat Last. I'm sure people have probably read that one, but you know, for me, I laughed immediately when it said Leaders Eat Last, because I'm like, yeah, you know, a lot of these coaches end up eating last at the affiliate anyway, so I'm like, that makes sense. But it talks about leadership and kind of a team focus, stories from the military to backgrounds in business. And so that, to me, I like those types of leadership books because I can apply it, you know, within work and within kind of a daily life to me. With seminars and stuff, you know, I've been working with NSCA as an advisory board in Texas. And that, you know, so me, NSCA conferences have been like, kind of part of my repertoire every year, whether it's doing the coaches conference or state clinics. You know, those can be beneficial just as much as they can be a time waster for us. If we're, you know, if you go to those things and it's that you're trying to find the key to making everything better in your program, whatever, you might not find it. But there's always, I think, always great topics and discussions at those clinics. Getting a chance to talk to guys afterwards, and you know, that to me, those are always great experiences to me. You know, and then we're just talking about FRC. I think that one is right now beyond relevant for all of us as strength coaches, just because of how many players are diving into it and how many private sectors are implementing it, you know, within their programs or as mobility for guys. So I think that, like, you know, kind of looking at it, I'm like, that was one I really have to jump on, because that's, I know I'm going to get questions for the next 3 years about it. So then, of course, the PBS CCS podcast, listen to that too.
Small shout out. I appreciate it though. No, the leaders eat last thing is funny, because like when you're new to pro ball, sometimes you don't realize that like you shouldn't crush the spread first. Yeah, and like,
yeah.
And but it takes one time for you to be at the spread at the wrong time for a guy to be like, eating before the players, huh?
Yeah.
So then it almost becomes like I will eat less.
Exactly. Yeah, you're forcing yourself to. Yeah, but those, I've enjoyed that book so far. It's been, you know, just again, a team focus, talking about the dynamic of a group, and, you know, again, it's applicable too. It's, you know, if you're, whether you're on a sports team or, you know, a business team, it's somebody's be selfish, then it's going to kind of ruin the group in a sense, and to an extent. Right. So it's been a good book to read so far.
Yeah. And then to your other point about, like NSCA and just conferences and just, you mentioned that it's not always like the topics that they present on. Sometimes it's just the side conversations that you have. And I that's why I always really enjoy winter meetings when we go, and like the past couple of years just being over Zoom, you know, and virtual, like it's just not the same. Like the presenters are always good and the topics are good and it's good learning. But just for me, the fun of it is just like, you know, if I do a podcast with you and then we get to meet in person at winter meetings and talk shop, right? It's like we just build on the connections that we're creating here. And sometimes, like for me, you know, I tell our staff, like, hey, just come hang with me and I'll introduce you to this guy or that guy or this girl or that girl. And just, you know, come hang, because it, like, the advantage for me is I get to talk to people on the podcast and, you know, kind of start those relationships instead of just like cold, like straight up walking up to you at winter meetings, like, hey, Chris Messina, nice to meet you. Like, and you're like, what are you doing, buddy? Like, you know, we kind of have this. So for me, the winter meetings and just conferences in general, like, I think that's the part that I really value the most, is just those side conversations. Definitely. Or just, you know, just talking shop outside of the hallway. You got like 10 minute break to get water and go pee, and you're like talking to somebody in the hall, and then it's oh, we got to go back in. You know what I mean? But for me, I think that's really the hidden value, or maybe the not so hidden value of the conferences.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I couldn't agree. And, you know, my first year with the Phillies, we actually, as a staff, went to the coaches conference in Charlotte, and that experience alone, you know, it was, I hadn't met the staff really. And so just being immersed in that environment with them and, you know, meeting coaches that I'm getting introduced to because, you know, my staff member knows them. And so it was, that to me, the networking on it there is awesome. And I've tried my best to stay in touch with people that I've met there, and even just asking simple questions and, you know, shooting ideas back and forth, I think it's more beneficial than we know.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Let's do this lightning round, and then I'll get you out of here. And
love it.
I don't want to keep you too long from time. So four questions, as long or as short of answers as you want. First question, who is your biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning?
Yeah, does Jeff Fish. He's a veteran NFL strength coach that I worked with at a performance facility in Frisco, Texas, after my first year with the Phillies. He's been a mentor, leader to me, major influence on my kind of career path, helped me mature as a coach. And I just a lot of respect for that guy and kind of how he taught me to mature and be a coach. And it definitely set me up to be more successful when I got back into baseball. You know, being confident more than anything. So that guy, a lot of respect for him, man.
One piece of equipment to train with, what would it be?
It's kettlebells or bands, I'd say. Probably bands, easier to transfer and you know, take with you.
So, yeah, especially in the minor leagues, right?
Oh,
in the trunks.
Oh, yeah.
What is your biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
Yeah, so, I mean, personally, it has to be, you know, now being a husband and now a father. that's pretty cool. Personal accomplishment. And then just, you know, this past year, the being named the strength conditioning coach of the year was a cool one for me, and kind of my professional personal one as well. So
last one, any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
Yeah. Stand-up comedian, probably.
Really?
I have to learn some jokes, but absolutely would choose that.
Interesting. Interesting. Henry, it's been good to get to know you just between this one and the AA one that we recorded. Definitely. The strength coach of the year. And if the listeners want to get in touch with you more, where can we get in contact? Social media? Yes. Or is there a better place?
Yeah. So I'm Angels email, henry.alec@angels.com. You know, feel free to questions, comments, whatever. I'm on Instagram too. I post pretty much baby photos now and some training stuff. So I try to have fun with that in season two, get guys to do cool stuff and, you know, watch it. My handle is on that. Yeah. Oh yeah. Dad mode. Yeah.
Well, Henry, I appreciate it, and enjoy the Arizona sun and enjoy your newborn, and we'll definitely talk soon.
Appreciate it, Chris. Thanks.
All right, everybody, that's going to conclude this episode with Henry. I hope you enjoyed this one. Having won Strength Coach of the Year in AA, it was good to hear about his experiences working with different teams and doing different internships that ultimately helped him find success in professional baseball. And for him to be able to share those stories with us, I think was really valuable. Three things that I took from Henry in this episode: create an environment that promotes consistency, intensity of training, and attention to detail. Explain your standards and hold your players accountable to them, and educate players to help them understand the why of what we are trying to implement. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.